Today, I'm excited to be talking about the second fundamental shift for the sexual desire discrepancy couple. At least that's how this couple is termed in the literature. We've talked about some problematic ways in seeing one as the high desire, one as the low desire couple. That was the last podcast. But this is the second requisite change. We talked about the first requisite change for this couple on the last podcast. That first requisite change was ensuring each partner's differences in sexual desire are accurately seen and respected. This one that we'll be talking about today, the second of three requisite changes, is ensuring that bids for connection are witnessed for what they are and accepted. Now, the caveat to accepted is acceptance doesn't just mean that the spouse that tries to connect through sex more often they don't just get to have as much sex whenever and however they want. So I think a lot of you are probably tuning in really curious today of how do we accept these bids without just saying, okay, we can have sex whenever and however you want. So we have this new stance or bearing towards our own and our spouse's sexual desire from the last podcast. We are no longer pitted against them. They are no longer pitted against us. We no longer see their sexual desire as problematic, flawed, dysfunctional, or fear our sexual desire is seen or is flawed, problematic, or dysfunctional. We can see that one of us is more often trying to connect, play, attach, relate, share with the other through sex, and our spouse attempts this in different ways, maybe not as often through sexuality. So this is a difference in how we and they, or we as a couple, try to connect and relate to the other person. So it's not problematic that one does a lot of these bids through sex, and it's not problematic that the other doesn't do as many through sex. It's just how the couple is trying to communicate and, you know, do all these things that I said before: connect, play, attach, relate, share. As we see the godly divine nature in them and us, both partners' attempts are experienced as equally valid. Each attempt, whether that's through these fun, creative dates, staying up late talking, a sexual bid or sexual activity, they are all seen. Everything that you can imagine is seen that the couple attempts to do, to connect, to bond, to do all these things, is seen as equally valid if we were able to navigate through that number one requisite change that I spoke about during the last podcast. So, and once again, I'm talking about this ideal couple that's really primed for this change. This is that couple where, you know, what has been termed as the low desire partner, or what I call the engaged open partner, it's that engaged open partner type. And then what's been termed as the high desire partner, what I've termed as the bonding playful explorer partner, or the typically high, what's talked about in the literature, the high desire partner. If the high desire partner is that type, this is our, you know, ideal couple. This enables this couple, this ideal couple, and if you're not there, like I said in the last podcast, that's okay. You need to have a clear vision of how on our best day we get there. On our best day, we navigate through this challenge that we've really struggled with. So this is that stepping stone. If you're not there yet, what you're working towards, what I'll cover in other podcasts of how to get to this stepping stone place, this vital pivotal spot of this ideal couple. But this enables the spouse less often to think to connect through sex, to be open to their partner's bids, and excited their spouse wants to spend time with them in the unique sexual world only they are invited into by their partner. So once again, this is not something in most I know there are people in that are highly religious in value-based relationships or monogamous relationships where they've gone out and had an affair. But despite that, even with those couples, this is this unique thing, the sexual world, where really only this couple, these two people within this marriage, are really supposed to be engaging in. So this is this unique thing that only they can do with their partner. Only their partner can do with them. So what does it look like to accept these sexual bids? So this question turns my thoughts to a comment John Gottman, like a really, really famous sexuality, or excuse me, a really famous couples researcher, made in a training that I attended years ago. This is one of his comments that he made that stuck out with me. When speaking of fighting or arguing with your spouse, he said, "Fight like you really love this person." And I thought when I heard that, oh, this is a comment that is either can be taken one of two ways, that can just kind of go in one ear, out the other ear, or a comment that I think could really stick with somebody for the long haul. That could really stick with a couple for the long haul. And as a clinician, I thought this is pretty significant. And, you know, clinician/researcher, I thought this is really significant. Fight like you really love this person. This narrative that we have, or this stance, or this place that we come from when we fight with our spouse, if we shift over from, you know, I'm trying to get something that's different than what they're trying to get, but if we shift from that to, you know, I want to relate with this person and figure out, resolve this problem like I love this person, that to me was a fundamental shift, and has been a fundamental shift in couples that I've worked with. So, not to mention that this is really the case. So, especially in this ideal couple that we're talking about, this is really the case. They really do love each other. You know, if they don't love each other, they're not this ideal couple. They're not at the stepping stone. But I would say even for those couples that are not the ideal couple, I would say the large majority of them probably really love each other. I can't say 100%. I can't say an exact percent because I don't know all of you. I don't know all of the couples that exist out there that are in the sexual desire discrepancy issue. But if I just went anecdotally off of my caseload, they all really love each other, or dang close to it, you know, really, really close to it. So we really do love our partner, but we don't often fight with them like we do, is John Gottman's point. So how often, it made me think, how often though, do we receive our partner's bid and examine it through these same eyes as John Gottman talked about, or see the divine in them as Tantra speaks of, or see the godly nature of our spouse asking to spend time with them, or see our eternal companion wanting to relate to us? You know, as would be talked about or seen through the eyes of a lot of you that are members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, how often are we seeing this bid for sexual connection through the lens, through the eyes of, this is our eternal companion that's wanting to relate to us in this unique, special way? So this is the spiritual, relational, and communicative place I would encourage each of us to interact with our spouse from. Now, that doesn't mean that being in this space will always result in intercourse or orgasm or even sexual touch. Just as you are in that space, so too would I encourage the spouse bidding to be there, to be in that same space. And if they're not in that space, you know, we've got some talking to do. We've got something to address, and I'll talk about this in later podcasts. But so you're in that space as the one seeing their bid, and the other spouse, or maybe you, are in the space of making the bid from that space. So now we've created this really unique spot where the one bidding and the one being bidded upon are in this really eternal companion, you know, thinking celestial space. Okay. Now the one bidded upon, So the one that's bitted upon may be tired, sick, distracted, or stressed, or simply, as much as they'd like to accept your bid, just not able to or wanting to connect with you in that way. And guess what? That is okay. Surely there are times you have turned down their playful snuggling, flirting, date idea, conversation, or bid for emotional connection. Surely there are times that you have turned that down, or that they have turned that down in you. During these times, perhaps you have offered and they have accepted a different bid to connect. So think about that. In those times that they've wanted to connect with you in one of these other ways, the non-sexual ways, or as you've wanted to connect with them in one of these non-sexual ways, hopefully they have, turned that bid down, but said, and I don't even know if I would see it as turning that bid down, but maybe redirect that bid. And, you or they have said, you know what, that date does sound like fun, that, I would love to have this conversation with you. I am really not in the right headspace, or I'm not feeling it right now, or, fill in the blank, but you know what, I would really like to do XYZ with you. I would really like to go on this other date. I would really like to hold you. I would really like to go on this walk with you, and just be out there in nature with you. Or I'd like to, and they may not say it, but I would like to be, physically playful, not sexually playful, but physically playful with you. So a redirecting, or almost like saying, okay, thank you for that bid. Here's what I'm thinking though. What do you think about this way of connecting? So Al Vernacchio, who is a sexuality educator, uses a pizza analogy that is applicable here. So he says, and there's a lot more to this analogy, but the parts that I'm going to take start here. He says, there is no winning or losing in pizza. So it's not like we talked about that, you are pitted against each other. He says, there's no winning or losing in pizza. You know, if you were to say, let's the idea of going on a date and getting pizza. So there's no winning or losing in pizza. When you are figuring out what to order, you talk about what sounds good to you, right? You say, pepperoni sounds good, or just cheese sounds good to me, or, pineapple. So my dad always liked to get pineapple and pepperoni pizza. And I know that's not a favorite of a lot of people, but you say, this is what sounds good to me and what sounds good to the other person. So even if you have gotten pizza with this other person for decades, you will, almost undoubtedly say, what sounds good to you? This is what sounds good to me. Do you still want to get what you usually get, or do you want to get something else? So, which is really, really fascinating that we use this approach. It's like this, open conversation about what sounds good. So I'll take this analogy even further, in that one partner might say, I'm not really in the mood for pizza tonight, but I'd really still like to go out with you. Can we get sushi? Or what's essentially being said when you make it applicable to sex, or I'd really like to accept your bid to connect through sex, but I'm not open to that tonight. But I'd be open to fill in the blank, another form of connection. Or not sex, but fill in the blank, insert a different, sexual activity. Not sex, but what about oral sex? Or what about some touching and, whatever it may be that the two of you were into, what about something other than intercourse? What about this other sexual activity? So, remember that you are both operating from this eternal companion space. That's the space that you're going to when you have this, quote unquote pizza discussion. When you have this, what would we like to do together here, in terms of connection? So, maybe we go get sushi. Maybe we don't have sex. Maybe we do something sexual. But I'm not sure if I'm feeling, intercourse. You know, the interesting thing though, and Al Vernacchio does talk about this, the interesting thing is even if your spouse might say, you know what, I would like the supreme, let's get everything, and you say, I just want to get cheese pizza. Let's say one of those is intercourse. They may change, or you may change in the middle of it and be like, you know what, I thought I wanted this, but actually I'm feeling the supreme. Let's get the whole deal. And if, let's say, the supreme is intercourse, and oral sex is maybe cheese pizza, they may say, hey, I'm open to some cheese pizza. You know, maybe just kind of a little bit of cheese pizza. And you start with cheese pizza or manual touch or oral sex. And then they or you say, you know what? Actually, I'd like some supreme. And more often than not, if you're a good dater, if you're a good spouse, you're a good companion, you're probably going to say, go ahead, you know, have a slice of my supreme pizza. Or yeah, let's do that. Or yeah, let's make another order. Let's order another pizza. So this is the space that you are in with your eternal companion. And remember, you're always thinking about it from this eternal companion perspective. An eternal companion doesn't necessarily mean everything sexual is reverenced. Everything sexual is, you know, hush hush, or you know, just really mild. Just like everything emotional isn't necessarily hushed, you know, really reverenced, really quiet. There may be, you know, really fun. You know, I'm not a big heights person, but a couple may go skydiving together or go, you know, rock climbing together. Those are things that I would probably say, no, thank you, because I don't love heights. But a couple, lots of couples do those things together. They feel emotionally bonded and connected together through doing those activities. So we want to think about from this eternal companion space, and not necessarily reverenced space or, you know, hush hush space, but eternal companion, it is you and I for the long haul. Space, what do you want to do with their bid, or what do they want to do with your bid? So I'm sure some of you are thinking, what if they continue to offer different bids other than sex, or only so often are offering, offering these bids for sex, or rarely accepting big bids for sex, you know, or sexual activity. You know, what if it's like, it turns out to be, you know, I like this whole idea, you know, that we come from this eternal companion space, but what if it's just kind of the same, where they're not really that open to it, even though they've shifted to this eternal companion perspective. So guess what? If that's the case, then you or they are fooling yourself or fooling yourselves and are not the ideal couple type that we were discussing. So if it happens that with these, you know, with this shift, with this requisite change, you know, the one and two requisite change and this third requisite change I'll talk about here in the next podcast, more likely than not, then you or they are not then you or they are fooling yourselves and are not this ideal couple type. Remember, the ideal couple type is, you know, what's been termed as the low desire partner, or the engaged open partner, as I would say it, or the high desire partner, or how I would say, the bonding playful explorer. So if you're not this ideal couple, that is okay. That will be covered in later podcasts. There's a lot more to it though. Believe it or not, this is way more straightforward than that couple that is not in this spot. But that will be covered in later podcasts. And it guess what? It is okay. You just need to get to this stepping stone that I've been talking about for this, you know, what I've been terming this ideal couple. So for the next podcast, I'm like 99% sure I'll be talking about the third requisite change, ensuring the couple embarks on a new way of exploring and experiencing sexuality. Thank you all.